from KQED.
This is the California Report. Good morning. I'm Saul Gonzalez. The state wants to establish a mandatory ethnic studies curriculum for all students in California public schools. That as a way to teach about marginalized minority and immigrant communities. But the draft curriculum has ignited a firestorm of criticism. Some say it's way too politically correct, with hardly a word about conservative points of view. Jewish groups, meanwhile, argue the curriculum barely mentions anti-Semitism or the legacy of the Holocaust. Jesse Gabriel is a state assemblyman from the San Fernando Valley and vice chair of the Legislative Jewish Caucus.
The curriculum reflects an anti-Jewish bias. It omits anti-Semitism. It goes through and it talks about the importance of studying hate crimes and prejudice and discrimination, and specifically discusses more than a dozen other forms of bias and discrimination, but omits anti-Semitism. In the few places where it does acknowledge the Jewish community, it does so in a denigrating and I would argue discriminatory fashion. It recommends song lyrics that are talking about Jewish control of the media, which is just this classic anti-Semitic trope. And then it sort of goes out of its way to criticize Israel, to bring in things that are, you know, traditionally outside the boundaries of the disciplinary boundaries of American ethnic studies, to single out and offer a very one-sided perspective on the Arab-Israeli conflict. So to me, I don't think that we can hope to stop anti-Semitism if we can't even acknowledge it.
Why do you think that is? If that's your reading of what's in this curriculum right now, why do you think that happened?
What we've been able to uncover so far is that this curriculum was drafted by a very small number of people, and that there was a little bit of an irregular process. I understand that normally the evaluation of this kind of curriculum would be a two-day in-person meeting, and it was sort of rushed through in a two-hour telephonic meeting. So I don't think that there was enough attention or oversight to this curriculum. But it's really troubling to us. Hate crimes against Jews have increased more than any other group in 2018. That, you know, Jews are consistently in the top three targets with African Americans and the LGBTQ community. That we're the top target for religiously based hate crimes, and yet this curriculum completely omits discussion of anti-Semitism. So it's a really, really troubling thing for us. And I think it's something that we're hoping to, you know, as we're going to sit, but now back in Sacramento and going to have conversations with folks at the State Board of Education to try to uncover how did we even get to this place where we have a draft curriculum that in so many different ways reflects an anti-Jewish bias.
Assemblymember Jesse Gabriel, thank you so much.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
State Superintendent of Public Instruction Tony Thurman will hold a press conference later this morning to address concerns raised by the Legislative Jewish Caucus. Meanwhile, State Board of Education President Linda Darling-Hammond has released a statement saying the draft curriculum falls short and needs to be substantially redesigned. We called the State Department of Education and asked Deputy Superintendent Stephanie Gregson about the controversy.
Once we received the draft from this advisory committee, we felt that there were some state board guidelines that were not met in this initial draft. For instance, I'll give you an example, that one of our state board guidelines requires the model curriculum to be inclusive, creating space for all students, regardless of race, ethnicity, class, gender, sexuality, or citizenship, to learn different perspectives. And we don't feel that that's represented well in this current draft form.
Again, that was Deputy Superintendent of Education Stephanie Gregson. Another day, another California lawsuit against the Trump administration. On Tuesday, Governor Gavin Newsom and California Attorney General Javier Becerra announced the state was suing to challenge the administration's efforts to repeal the federal Clean Power Act. If you're keeping score, it's the state's 55th lawsuit against the administration. Here's more from KQED political reporter Katie Orr.
The Clean Power Plan is an Obama administration policy designed to lower carbon dioxide emissions across the country. California is among the 22 states, six local governments, and the District of Columbia suing to challenge its repeal. Attorney General Becerra says, regardless of their politics, Americans support the Clean Power Plan.
They don't want to go back to the old way. In fact, it would be too expensive for many of our states to try to go back to doing it the old polluting way. We've made too many investments.
The Trump administration maintains the cost of complying with the plan outweighs its benefits to stakeholders. For the California Report, I'm Katie Orr in Sacramento.
The original Clean Power Plan was going to cut emissions from U.S. power plants by nearly a third by the year 2030. The Trump administration's replacement plan would cut emissions by less than 1% over the same period of time. And here's a good news, bad news kind of a story. The good news? California says it's ahead of schedule when it comes to cutting carbon emissions. The bad news, it might not be able to keep up the pace. KQED science reporter Lauren Sommer fills us in.
The headline is, California has already hit its 2020 carbon emissions goal, thanks largely to the rise of renewable energy. But here's the fine print. The biggest reason for California's 2017 emissions drop was a boom in hydropower from dams. It rained a lot. And as Californians know, that doesn't happen every year. Along with that, we're driving more than ever, so vehicle emissions are still going up. That means a lot more Californians will have to switch to electric cars for the state to meet its climate goals beyond 2020. For the California Report, I'm Lauren Sommer.
Support for the California Report comes from Personal Capital, offering wealth management and online financial tools to help customers manage their money with transparency and control. More information at personalcapital.com. Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose Fund for Strategic Innovation supports transformative ideas that benefit humanity while protecting the natural world, recognizing through science the interdependence of all living systems. And the James Irvine Foundation, committed to a California where all low-income workers have the power to advance economically. Learn more at irvine.org.
Now to housing. Tens of thousands of low-income renters in California keep roofs over their heads through a federal program called Section 8. It provides government-issued vouchers to people that help them pay for their rent. But a lot of landlords refuse to take Section 8. So, following the lead of LA and San Diego, the San Jose City Council just passed a law making it illegal to discriminate against renters who use the vouchers. KQED's Sonia Hudson introduces us to someone who could benefit.
Demetria Spikes has been trying to use her Section 8 voucher in San Jose for 5 years.
Made me feel like I was a loser at life.
Where is she living now? She's homeless and sleeping on a bus, kind of. Spike says she can usually only sleep 3 hours per night.
The bus could be scary at times because you don't know who's going to sit by you or what kind of mood they're going to be in. Some of them get on the bus with knives.
Spikes is hardly alone in her struggle to use a voucher. A recent study by the city found 2/3 of listings on Craigslist did not accept Section 8. Research shows Section 8 non-discrimination laws are effective at helping people like Spikes. Areas with them have a 42% lower voucher rejection rate than those that don't. That's according to a study by the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development.
The biggest issues with the program are more procedural.
Michael Pierce is the president of Prodigy Property Group, which manages almost 500 units in San Jose. There's a multi-step process, including passing a unit inspection, that can take up to 2 months before the federal government can start making rent payments.
That's one of the biggest issues when you've got a smaller owner who doesn't have a lot of units. They may not be able to afford to wait 2 months because they've got mortgage payments and other things that they've got to make for their property.
Housing advocates say they suspect there are other unspoken biases at play. For instance, voucher holders are predominantly people of color, more than 85% in San Jose. Peggy Bailey is with the nonpartisan Center on Budget and Policy Priorities.
And for someone's racism, basically, to lead to a family being unable to have a place to live should be unacceptable.
During the city council meeting, landlords expressed concern that the new rule will open them up to lawsuits. But, like similar laws across the state, San Jose's allows landlords to reject applicants based on credit scores or rental history, or just raise their rents high enough to screen out voucher holders. For the California Report, I'm Sonia Hudson.
And finally, a controversial mural at a San Francisco high school will not be painted over. After a heated meeting last night, the city school board voted to reverse its earlier vote to destroy the 1930s artwork. Instead, the mural will be covered up. The Life of Washington depicts our country's first president with slaves on his plantation and a dead Native American. Critics say that even if a work of art offends, it shouldn't be destroyed. But student Ariana Anton Ramirez says she feels the painting is dehumanizing.
We were fighting for these to be painted down, to be covered up completely, because we're worried that with panels, we're going to be back here in 20 years having the same fight.
School district staff say covering up the mural could take at least a year. And that's the California Report from KQED Public Radio. I'm Saul Gonzalez.